it, but it sounds wonderful. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the show, Gina Bennett talks about nobody and no one on Ask a Teacher. I have a report about Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. And we close the show with an American story. Today we hear A White Heron by Sarah Orne Jewett. But first, this report from Dan Friedel.
Agriculture companies are using new methods to change the genes of plants to produce more productive crops. The process of gene editing is gaining attention from people interested in agriculture. It makes changes to the existing genes of a plant, such as wheat. That is different from genetic modification, which produces what are known as genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. That process introduces completely new DNA to a plant's genetic information. Regulators and scientists believe gene editing is less risky than genetic modification. They say it is closer to traditional methods of plant breeding. The process permits scientists to target several genes for editing. A state-run company in Australia is preparing for a major trial of gene-edited wheat. Australian seed breeder Intergrain recently imported thousands of wheat seeds created by the American agricultural technology company Inari. Intergrain chief Tress Walmsley said the wheat imports included hundreds of new genetic variations. Walmsley said the seeds are growing in a testing greenhouse in the state of Queensland. The plan is to create more seeds, which can be planted across Australia in 2025. Our job is to work out which gene combination gives the best results. Our goal is at least 10% yield improvement. These seeds have the potential to achieve that, she said. The company believes it could be selling seeds to Australian farmers starting in 2028. Inari uses artificial intelligence, AI, to consider a huge number of possible edits, and then uses the CRISPR gene editing tool to change more than one gene at a time. Intergrain and Inari believe the program could result in stronger wheat and bigger crops with a process 10 to 15 times faster than traditional plant breeding. Plant breeding happens when scientists mate two plants with desirable characteristics. It can take years for the best version of a plant to arrive. Some gene-edited crops already exist. Most of them offer small nutritional improvements or have an increased ability to resist disease. The new wheat plants in Australia will have many of those qualities. We want to solve food security, climate change, and farm profitability at the same time, said Inari's chief Ponzi Trevisvavette. Australia is working to ensure that it can export the gene-edited wheat. Some countries, such as the U.S. and Japan, have already said they believe gene editing is not very different from plant breeding, officials in those countries will be more likely to approve the Australian wheat. The European Union is expected to make a similar decision, and China approved a gene-edited wheat plant in May. Inari said it is working with agriculture companies in the U.S. on a gene-edited soybean that will produce larger crop yields. Many countries have already accepted genetically modified soybeans because they are mostly used to feed animals. Officials, however, have been slower to approve the modification of wheat because much of it is used in products made for humans. I'm Dan Friedel.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
How does it feel for rock star Mick Jagger to be back on tour, singing and dancing before thousands at 80 years old? Like being on stage at 78, the Rolling Stones frontman said one day after performing at a huge show near Boston, Massachusetts. It took a couple of shows to get in the groove, but now we're into it, Jagger said. I'm feeling good. He first sang the words, "What a drag it is getting old," back in the 1960s. But Jagger is still having fun, although the singer turns 81 on July 26th. And he does not plan to stop rocking anytime soon. The Rolling Stones are performing in America in support of the band's most recent album, Hackney Diamonds. The group will consider touring in other countries next year, Jagger said in an interview. We'll consider those offers, where we're going to go, and where it will be fun, he said. It could be Europe, could be South America, could be anywhere. Jagger also said the Stones are likely to release more new music soon. Hackney Diamonds was released last October. It was the first new material from the British rockers in 18 years. The album received wide critical praise. At each show, Jagger commands the stage for 2 hours with bandmates Keith Richards, 80, and Ronnie Wood, 77. Fans say Jagger still provides a highly energetic performance. A New York Times review of a recent show in New Jersey said Jagger's energy seemed to grow greater as the night grew late. Where does he find such energy? I just enjoy it, Jagger said. Really, that's the answer. I just love doing it. You get this back and forth with the audience. You can see they're having a good time. You're having a good time, and it gives you a lot more energy. Jagger said dancing and gym workouts each week help keep him in good physical condition. His father was a physical education teacher, and Jagger has often credited his good health to genetics. On the tour, The Stones play about four songs from Hackney Diamonds in between the band's older hits. The list changes for every performance. Coming up, Jagger said, he hopes some of the artists who made guest appearances on Hackney Diamonds will join him on stage. They include Paul McCartney, Lady Gaga, Stevie Wonder, and Elton John. The Stones recorded many songs while making Hackney Diamonds, but not all of them were put on the album, Jagger said. We've got a lot more, so I think we may be set up to make another album quite soon, he said. Jagger stays busy outside of the music world also. He is currently producing two films. On the tour, the band asks ticket holders at each stop to vote online for one song they want included in that night's show. Boston fans chose Emotional Rescue from 1980. In Boston, Jagger urged the crowd to vote in the American presidential election in November. He did not say which candidate he favored. Jagger has made brief political jabs on stage and is sometimes criticized as a British citizen commenting on American politics. First of all, I think everyone has a right to have an opinion, Jagger said. It's a free country. I feel like it's such an important election, he added. I've got seven children who are U.S. citizens. I care about what happens to their future. And I pay a lot of American taxes. So why shouldn't I be able to say what I feel? I'm Katie Weaver.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Imtiaz in India about the words nobody and no one. My name is Ndi Imtiaz from India, Bihar State. My question is that what is difference between nobody and no one? Thank you for writing, Imtiaz. I'm happy to answer your question. Nobody and no one are indefinite pronouns. Indefinite pronouns refer to people in a general and open way. No is part of both nobody and no one. That tells us there are not any people. For example, no one knows his name. Nobody knows his name. Both sentences mean there is not one person who knows his name. There are no major differences in the meanings of no one and nobody. Both are treated as singular nouns. But there are some small differences in how and when we use the two. Nobody is more informal. It is used mostly in spoken English. No one is a little more formal. It is used more in written English. Nobody can also be used as a noun in English. For example, he was just a nobody 5 years ago. This is an unkind way to say that someone is not important or not well known. We hope this explanation helps you, Imtiaz. Do you have a question about American English?
send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett. And Teacher Gina is back with us today. Thanks for coming on, Gina.
Hi, Katie.
Today's report says that both nobody and no one are treated as singular nouns.
Well, specifically, when they are the subject, both nobody and no one use third-person singular s with the verb.
Oh, so nobody listens to me, not nobody listen to me.
Yes, listens. However, we often use the plural pronoun they to refer back to no one or nobody, even though they're singular.
Nobody listens to me. They are not nice.
Right. Because nobody and no one refer to people in general, both male and female, we use plural, they.
That's a good clarification.
And Katie, I always listen to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Gina. See you soon. And now, American Stories. Here is Kay Gallant with A White Heron by Sarah Orne Jewett.
The forest was full of shadows. As a little girl hurried through it one summer evening in June, it was already 8 o'clock, and Sylvie wondered if her grandmother would be angry with her for being so late. Every evening, Sylvie left her grandmother's house at 5:30 to bring their cow home. The old animal spent her days out in the open country, eating sweet grass. It was Sylvie's job to bring her home to be milked. When the cow heard Sylvie's voice calling her, she would hide among the bushes. This evening, it had taken Sylvie longer than usual to find her cow. The child hurried the cow through the dark forest, following a narrow path that led to her grandmother's home. The cow stopped at a small stream to drink. As Sylvie waited, she put her bare feet in the cold, fresh water of the stream. She had never before been alone in the forest as late as this. The air was soft and sweet. Sylvie felt as if she were a part of the gray shadows and silver leaves that moved in the evening breeze. She began thinking how it was only a year ago that she came to her grandmother's farm. Before that, she had lived with her mother and father in a dirty, crowded factory town. One day, Sylvie's grandmother had visited them and had chosen Sylvie from all her brothers and sisters to be the one to help her on her farm in Vermont. The cow finished drinking, and as the 9-year-old child hurried through the forest to the home she loved, she thought again about the noisy town where her parents still lived. Suddenly, the air was cut by a sharp whistle not far away. Sylvie knew it wasn't a friendly bird's whistle. It was the determined whistle of a person. She forgot the cow and hid in some bushes. But she was too late. "Hello, little girl," a young man called out cheerfully. How far is it to the main road? Sylvie was trembling as she whispered, 2 miles. She came out of the bushes and looked up into the face of a tall young man carrying a gun. The stranger began walking with Sylvie as she followed her cow through the forest. I've been hunting for birds, he explained, but I've lost my way. Do you think I can spend the night at your house? Sylvie didn't answer. She was glad they were almost home. She could see her grandmother standing near the door of the farmhouse. When they reached her, the stranger put down his gun and explained his problem to Sylvie's smiling grandmother. Of course you can stay with us, she said. We don't have much, but you're welcome to share what we have. Now, Sylvie, get a plate for the gentleman. After eating, they all sat outside. The young man explained he was a scientist who collected birds. Do you put them in a cage? Sylvie asked. No, he answered slowly. I shoot them and stuff them with special chemicals to preserve them. I have over 100 different kinds of birds from all over the United States in my study at home. Sylvie knows a lot about birds, too, her grandmother said proudly. She knows the forest so well, the wild animals come and eat bread right out of her hands. So, Sylvie knows all about birds. Maybe she can help me then, the young man said. I saw a white heron not far from here 2 days ago. I've been looking for it ever since. It's a very rare bird, the little white heron. Have you seen it too? He asked Sylvie. But Sylvie was silent. You would know it if you saw it, he added. It's a tall, strange bird with soft white feathers and long, thin legs. It probably has its nest at the top of a tall tree. Sylvie's heart began to beat fast. She knew that strange white bird. She had seen it on the other side of the forest. The young man was staring at Sylvie. I would give $10 to the person who showed me where the white heron is. That night, Sylvie's dreams were full of all the wonderful things she and her grandmother could buy for $10. Sylvie spent the next day in the forest with the young man. He told her a lot about the birds they saw. Sylvie would have had a much better time if the young man had left his gun at home. She could not understand why he killed the birds he seemed to like so much. She felt her heart tremble every time he shot an unsuspecting bird as it was singing in the trees. But Sylvie watched the young man with eyes full of admiration. She had never seen anyone so handsome and charming. A strange excitement filled her heart, a new feeling the little girl did not recognize, love. At last evening came. They drove the cow home together. Long after the moon came out and the young man had fallen asleep, Sylvie was still awake. She had a plan that would get the $10 for her grandmother and make the young man happy. When it was almost time for the sun to rise, she quietly left her house and hurried through the forest. She finally reached a huge pine tree, so tall it could be seen for many miles around. Her plan was to climb to the top of the pine tree. She could see the whole forest from there. She was sure she would be able to see where the white heron had hidden its nest. Sylvie's bare feet and tiny fingers grabbed the tree's rough trunk. Sharp, dry branches scratched at her like cat's claws. The pine tree's sticky sap made her fingers feel stiff and clumsy as she climbed higher and higher. The pine tree seemed to grow taller the higher that Sylvie climbed. The sky began to brighten in the east. Sylvie's face was like a pale star when at last she reached the tree's highest branch. The golden sun's rays hit the green forest. Two hawks flew together in slow-moving circles far below Sylvie. Sylvie felt as if she could go flying among the clouds, too. To the west, she could see other farms and forests. Suddenly, Sylvie's dark gray eyes caught a flash of white that grew larger and larger. A bird with broad white wings and a long, slender neck flew past Sylvie and landed on a pine branch below her. The white heron smoothed its feathers and called to its mate, sitting on their nest in a nearby tree. Then it lifted its wings and flew away. Sylvie gave a long sigh. She knew the wild bird's secret now. Slowly, she began her dangerous trip down the ancient pine tree. She did not dare to look down and tried to forget that her fingers hurt and her feet were bleeding. All she wanted to think about was what the stranger would say to her when she told him where to find the heron's nest. As Sylvie climbed slowly down the pine tree, the stranger was waking up back at the farm. He was smiling because he was sure from the way the shy little girl had looked at him that she had seen the white heron. About an hour later, Sylvie appeared. Both her grandmother and the young man stood up as she came into the kitchen. The splendid moment to speak about her secret had come. But Sylvie was silent. Her grandmother was angry with her. Where had she been? The young man's kind eyes looked deeply into Sylvie's own dark gray ones. He could give Sylvie and her grandmother $10. He had promised to do this, and they needed the money. Besides, Sylvie wanted to make him happy. But Sylvie was silent. She remembered how the white heron came flying through the golden air and how they watched the sun rise together from the top of the world. Sylvie could not speak. She could not tell the heron's secret and give its life away. The young man went away disappointed later that day. Sylvie was sad. She wanted to be his friend. He never returned. But many nights, Sylvie heard the sound of his whistle as she came home with her grandmother's cow. Were the birds better friends than their hunter might have been? Who can know?
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.